Chapter 69. The Mercedes stretch limousine stopped at the yacht club dock in the harbor of Alexandria. The chauffeur opened the door and Robert Capesterre climbed from the back seat. Wearing a tailored white linen suit with a powder blue shirt and matching tie, he no longer looked like Topiltzin. He was guided down a stone stairway to a waiting launch. He sat back in the soft cushions and enjoyed the ride across the harbor and through the entrance where one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, the famed lighthouse known as the Pharos of Alexandria, once stood, a towering 135 meters high. Only a few stones built into an Arab fort were all that remained of its ruins. The launch headed for a large yacht that was moored around the harbor and off the long wide beach. Capesterre had walked her decks on previous occasions. He knew her length to be 45 meters. She was Dutch-built, with sleek aircraft-style lines. She had transoceanic range and a cruising speed of 30 knots. The pilot eased back on the throttle and slipped the launch into reverse as it approached the boarding steps. Capesterre was met on deck by a man dressed in an open silk shirt, shorts, and sandals. They embraced. "Welcome, brother," said Paul Capesterre. "It's been too long." "You look healthy, Paul. I'd say you and Ahmad Yazid have gained about 8 pounds." 12. "Almost seems strange to see you out of uniform," said Robert. Paul shrugged. "I get tired of Yazid's Arabic gear and that stupid turban." He stood back and smiled at his brother. "You're a fine one to talk. I don't see you in your Aztec god outfit." "Topiltzin is temporarily on holiday." Robert paused and nodded at the deck. "You've borrowed Uncle Theodore's boat, I see." "He hardly has use for it anymore since the family left the drug business." Paul Capesterre turned and led his brother into the dining salon. "Come along, I've had lunch set. Now that I've learned you finally developed a taste for champagne, I've dusted off a bottle of Uncle Theodore's finest vintage." Robert took an offered glass. "I thought President Hassan placed you under house arrest." "The only reason I bought the villa is because of a hidden escape tunnel that runs underground for 100 meters and comes up in a mechanic's repair shop." "Also owned by you?" "Of course." Robert raised his glass. "Here's to Mother and Father's grand scheme." Paul nodded. "Although at the moment your end in Mexico looks more promising than mine in Egypt. You're not to blame for the Lady Flamborough fiasco. The family approved the plan. No one could foretell the cunning of the Americans." "That idiot Suleiman Aziz Amar," said Paul harshly. "He blundered the operation away." "Any news of survivors?" "Family agents report most were killed, including Amar and your Captain Machado. Several were taken prisoner, but they know nothing of our involvement." "Then we should consider ourselves lucky. With Machado and Amar dead, no intelligence agency in the world can touch us. They were the only link. President Hassan didn't have any trouble putting two and two together, or I wouldn't be under house arrest." "Yes," agreed Robert, "but Hassan can't act against you without solid evidence. If he tried, your followers would rise up and prevent any trial. The family's advice is to keep a low profile while consolidating your power base, at least for another year to see how the wind blows." "For now, the wind blows at the backs of Hassan, Halakamil, and Abu Hamid," said Paul wrathfully. "Be patient. Soon your Islamic fundamentalist movement will sweep you into the Egyptian parliament." Paul looked at Robert with a cagey expression in his eyes. The discovery of the Alexandria Library treasures might speed things a bit. "You've read the latest news reports?" asked Robert. "Yes, the Americans claim they've found the storage chamber in Texas. Possession of the ancient geological charts could be to your advantage. If they point the way to rich oil and mineral reserves, you can claim credit for turning Egypt's economy around." "I've considered that possibility," said Paul. "If I read the White House correctly, the president will use the artifacts and scrolls as bargaining chips. While Hassan begs and haggles for a paltry share of Egypt's heritage, I can go before the people and raise the issue as an outrage against our revered ancestors." Paul hesitated, his mind leapfrogging. Then he continued, his eyes narrowing. "With the right semantics, I think I can twist Muslim law and the words of the Quran into a rallying cry that will crack Hassan's government." Robert laughed. "Try and keep a straight face when you speak. The Christians may have burned most of the scrolls in AD 391, but it was the Muslims in 646 who destroyed the library forever. A waiter began serving Scottish smoked salmon and Iranian caviar. They ate for a few minutes in silence. Then Paul said, "I hope you realize the burden of seizing the artifacts falls on your shoulders." Robert stared over the rim of his champagne glass. "You talking to me or to Pilsen?" Paul laughed. "To Pilsen." Robert set down the glass and slowly raised his hands in the air as if beseeching a fly on the ceiling. His eyes took on a hypnotic look, and he began to speak in a haunting tone. "We will rise up by the tens of thousands, by the hundreds of thousands. We will cross the river as one and take what was buried on our land, land that was stolen from us by the Americans. Many will be sacrificed, but the gods demand we take what rightfully belongs to Mexico." Then he dropped his hands and grinned. "Needs a little polishing, of course." "I believe you've borrowed my script," said Paul, applauding. "What's the difference, so long as we're family?" Robert took a final forkful of salmon. "Delicious. I could eat smoked salmon by the boatload." He washed it down with the champagne. "If I can seize the treasures and hold on to them, then what? I only want the maps. Whatever else can be smuggled out goes to the family to keep or sell on the black market to wealthy collectors, agreed?" Robert thought a moment and then nodded. "Agreed." The waiter brought a tray of glasses, a bottle of brandy, and a box of cigars. Paul slowly lit a panatella. He looked questioningly through the smoke at his brother. "How do you intend to grab the library treasures?" "I had planned to launch a massive unarmed invasion of the American border states after I gained power. This strikes me as a good opportunity for a test run." Robert stared at his glass as he swirled his brandy. "Once I set the wheels of my organization in motion, the poor in the cities and the peasants of the country will be gathered up and transported north to Roma, Texas. I can assemble 300,000, perhaps as many as 400,000 on our side of the Rio Grande in 4 days."
"What about American resistance?"
"Every soldier, border patrolman, and sheriff in Texas will be helpless to stop the crush. I plan to put the women and children in the first wave across the bridge and river. Americans are a maudlin lot. They may have slaughtered villagers in Vietnam, but they won't massacre unarmed civilians on their own doorstep. I can also play on White House fears of a nasty international incident. The president won't dare issue orders to shoot. Static resistance will be inundated by a human tide that will sweep up through Roma and occupy the underground vault containing the library treasures.
And Topilton will lead them?"
"And I will lead them."
"How long do you think you can hold on to the vault?" asked Paul.
"Long enough for ancient language translators to assess and remove any scrolls pertaining to long-lost mineral deposits."
"That could take weeks."
"You won't have the time. The Americans will build up their forces and push your people back into Mexico within a few days."
"Not if I threaten to burn the scrolls and destroy the art objects."
Robert patted his lips with a napkin. "My jet should be refueled by now. I'd better return to Mexico and set the operation in motion." Respect for his brother's inventive reasoning showed in Paul's eyes. "With their backs against the wall, the American government will have no option but to deal. I like that."
"Certainly the largest horde of people to invade the United States since the British in the Revolutionary War," said Robert.
"I like that even better."